You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
What's going on, Jermaine Johnson? Tune in to Turn on the Jets podcast.
Hey, this is Vinny Pasquantino of the Kansas City Royals. Make sure you tune into the Turn on the Jets podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Turn the Jets podcast. I'm your host, Will Parkinson, at WillPod11 on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Joined by a special guest, I think second time on the show now. We actually got to meet down in Indy at the Combine, Sam Monson of PFF, PFF NFL pod. Sam, how are we doing today?
Good. How's it going?
I'm good, man. It's Jets-Patriots week, which as a kid was a rivalry. Recently, as a Yankee fan, I acknowledge that rivalries don't really work if the other team never wins. So, the Jets have lost 12 in a row and 20 of 22 to the Patriots. So I'm fired up this week because there's a chance that could change. Obviously a lot's going on with the Jets early on this year, and they've been a surprise to most, or at least even if the most optimistic person would say they've been at least at expectations or slightly above. And most people, they would probably say they're well above. I guess big picture, and then we'll get into some of the players and some of the matchups and things. What have your impressions has kind of been at the Jets through 7 weeks? I know you guys talked about it on the show, but 7 weeks, Jets are 5-2. Didn't see this coming, I assume.
No, I think they've been impressive. They've definitely exceeded my expectations. And I think they're obviously moving in the right direction. Like, a lot of the things that they've done have worked out immensely well, some of the areas that they've added players. And this is despite the offensive line being riddled with injuries this year, which is their biggest problem. Like, that was supposed to be a top 10 unit, I think, heading into the season. It was certainly trending in that direction with all the additions that they've made to it. And they've just been hammered, repeatedly with injuries and losing guys consistently all along the way. So for them to be where they are, despite that offensive line getting hit that hard, I think it's really impressive. And a lot of it is driven by almost every move they've made on the defensive side working out. Like, they've gone from the worst cornerback room in the NFL to having one of the best cornerback duos in the league in two moves, right? DJ Reed in free agency, Sauce Gardner at the top of the draft. Like, both those guys look like absolute home run picks. The defensive line, they've been adding players for a while, but getting Carl Lawson back, getting Quinnen Williams playing at the peak of his powers, like the additions that they've made, John Franklin Myers is already a good player, but they're really all working out. And then, guys like Garrett Wilson on the offensive side looked really good. I mean, maybe he's being held back a little bit with the change of quarterback and the way that offense has sort of pivoted now with Zach Wilson there, but he looks like a great addition as well.
Yeah, the Jets have been interesting because I was talking about this a little bit this morning of, like, how many guys did they really add? If you thought about from last year's roster in camp, like, how many guys they really add? And then it's like, it's not even necessarily, it's CJ Mosley playing at a much more CJ Mosley level. I mean, Quan Alexander's obviously been a nice addition, but you look at the safety room, you get a full year of a Marcus Joyner, Jordan Whitehead. Those guys start off the year, I think the first three games, like, they were probably two of the 10 worst graded safeties in the league. And then the Marcus Joyner since then, I think, has forced four or five turnovers. Whitehead started to play much better. And then the cornerback play, I think you highlighted, has been, it's really impressive. I think, if I'm not mistaken, at least as before the Monday night game, I think they Reed and Sauce were two of the top 10 graded corners in the league for you guys. I think Sauce was at 6 and Reed was at 9 or 10. But you look at some of the other free agent deals and the Jets, that Reed deal looks like a steal now, when at the time everyone's like, oh, it's a decent amount of money for a smaller zone corner. JC Jackson's getting a lot of money, or, there's some other guys, and it's like, Reed's been the best one, him and Bradbury, obviously. But you mentioned Quinnen Williams, great. It's at any metric you look at, PFF, pass rusher win rate, the tape in general, if you just love tape, stat sheet, traditional stat sheet, he's been unbelievable. And is it almost like an about time moment for Quinnen Williams? Because I feel like we've seen this the last couple of years of, we'll see flashes of, oh, he'll have a nice game here or there, and then he goes missing. Now it's like every game feels like a couple quarterback hits, a couple pressures, some good run game stoppage. I know he had the wonky grade 2 weeks ago, and that obviously was a big thing. But Quinnen Williams-wise, like, he's been as impressive as it gets outside of, I guess, Aaron Donald, who basically breaks every system he's in.
Yeah, and really, if you look at that, there's a lot of these young kind of interior guys that have come into the league the last few years, and they're all playing really well together right now. Like Quinnen Williams, Jeffrey Simmons, you know, all these guys are sort of dominating right at the same time. Derek Brown is having a career year as well. For Quinnen, I think it makes a lot of sense. It kind of tallies with what his Alabama career was. Like, he wasn't dominant from day one and was just a constant superstar in that defense all the way through. It took him a while to get going. And then that final year, he was just crazy. And particularly as a pass rusher, he was an absolute force. And he sort of felt like a player that might do that in the NFL, that would always flash because of the, just the potential and the athletic ability that he has, but it might take a little while for him to really hit his groove and become that player at this level. I think that's exactly what's happening. We just reached this point where it's all coming together. And now you're getting that Alabama version of Quinnen Williams in the NFL, which I think is always, that potential has always been there. We saw that from day one. And yeah, he's playing absolutely incredibly right now. He's a real force as a pass rusher. He's been good in the run game as well. He's become one of those guys that's just a constant problem in the middle for teams.
Yeah, it's interesting. I want to transition to Sauce, and I'm going to take a little bit of what you said on the show, and I'll let you kind of expand on it, what you guys talked about, I believe, Monday morning. But so the Sauce pick, I think everyone kind of was like, the Jets could go in a couple different directions here, you know, edge rusher, tackle, even receiver. And cornerback was the other one where obviously the room was really empty last year. And yeah, Brandon Echols has played nicely in his spare, you know, time. And Michael Carter second's been good, but even when signing Reed, they were still a corner short. I think the expectation was, well, he's Sherman, he's Cromartie, he's going to a place where Darrell Revis is, in my opinion, he's the best cover corner ever. Is like, now he's got Revis and, you know, who hasn't talked in the media in 5 years, all of a sudden talking about Sauce and everything. And the expectations during camp, you're like, this is really impressive. Okay, it's training camp. Let's see him in the game. Preseason, really impressive. It's preseason. Even early on, it's like, oh, he's covering Mark Andrews, he's a tight end. The last couple of weeks, it's been constant, like, throwing a deep ball at him makes no sense at this point. Like, it's not going to work. Maybe you draw a flag. But what I wanted you to kind of talk about a little bit, I know you guys talked about this, but this level of physicality that the Legion of Boom, you guys kind of mentioned, of like, a lot of these guys were so physical that they kind of dictated the game. And it feels like Sauce, while he's only 190 pounds, him and Reed are really physical, especially in kind of the hand fighting press coverage side of things. Can you kind of just talk a little bit about that and why that's kind of helping Sauce so much right now, where he's grading? I mean, it's unbelievable what we're seeing.
Yeah, like, I think a lot of times DBs are kind of at the mercy of, you know, the officials and when they're going to throw the flag and what's too much contact and what isn't. And, you know, that you hear all the time about how much preparation NFL teams do, the prep work on officials, you know, and who's going to throw flags and what kind of, where their line is and what you can get away with and all those kinds of things. But I think there's also an element in to which these guys can dictate that line themselves, because you can't throw a flag on everything, right? So if you come into a game as an official and all of a sudden it's just constant physicality in the routes between the corner and the wide receiver, endless hand fighting, you know, all this kind of stuff, you can't throw a flag on every play. So if it's going to be a game like that, it changes how you're going to officiate it. You have to start moving your own line and go, okay, we're only going to call the really egregious stuff, but we're kind of forced into letting them play to an extent because you can't go any other way. And I think the Legion of Boom consciously did that, where they went into games and said, we are going to get more physical on receivers than any other defense and force officials to change the way they call games, because you can't throw a flag every single play. You're going to have to move your line. Otherwise the game's going to get absurd. And they basically force you into making the game more physical. I think Sauce is doing a similar thing where he's going to get aggressive as much as he can and basically dare the officials to call it. And a lot of the times they're not going to do it because it's during the course of a route. He's going to be able to kind of entice the receiver into fighting back a little bit. And we saw that with Cortland Sutton. You know, the announcers were saying, well, it was hand fighting the whole way. It was 50-50. even though like Sauce is the guy initiating that contact, right? If there's no contact from Sauce, maybe they don't, maybe Cortland Sutton never gets involved in a physical contact because he's just trying to run by the guy. But when you institute it, you can kind of create this illusion of this is just hand fighting. This is just 50-50 contact. This is just letting them play. So I think Richard Sherman was great at that for his entire career. Like, I am going to make sure the contact stays for the entirety of this play. I'm going to get my hands on you, and then we're going to fight the whole way down the field because otherwise you can't get a free release off me. I think Sauce is doing the same kind of thing. And Darrell Revis was always amazing at this as well. He did it in a different way. I think he was a real master at understanding exactly where that line was on any given play and playing just the right side of it. But I think the fact that Sauce is consciously or subconsciously, you know, figuring out a way of maintaining that kind of contact and offsetting any kind of disadvantage that he would have otherwise in speed or whatever is huge for his long-term success.
Yeah. It's the thing with Sauce that's interesting, as you mentioned as well, it's just, he has like all these veteran tricks of the trade already of, yeah, you know, how to kind of make, how to like basically trap a receiver's arm. I used to hate that. And then that's what you kind of mentioned of like, it looked like Cortland Sutton was hand fighting him, but Sauce, yeah, has got his arm pinned to his side. So he's got to get out of it. And you see that a lot in soccer. And I know we both watch soccer, but like a guy will go up for a header and he'll literally grab the guy's arm. So it looks like, it's like, well, he didn't really grab him, but kind of the offensive side of the ball, the defense has been awesome. Every metric, again, especially, I know they've played some backup quarterbacks, and I get that side of things. Obviously, they're carrying them right now. They've created a bunch of turnovers, the pressure rate, all that stuff. Special team has been really good. I think the Jets have kind of always been a really good special teams unit, and now that they have the lead and things like that, they can kind of continue to emphasize itself. They're forcing more punts so they can get, you know, with all that stuff. But offensive side of the ball is weird right now because Zach Wilson's had some times where he's looked pretty good. Clean pocket numbers are fantastic. I know that's usually a translatable year over year. You like, that's one of the most kind of translatable stats of, if you're good in a clean pocket one year, you're pretty probably going to be good every year. The other side of it is whether it's some free rushers, I understand that people are going to flood my mentions saying I'm hating on Zach. I'm not. There are some free rushers and there's some missed assignments to the offensive line. It's all true. There's also a lot of spin moves and really weird throws and waiting to throw the ball away to the last second and then not really throwing it away. I think there's a two or Zach's turnover where he throws, or literally that, where he just could have thrown it away. Have you ever seen something like this where it's like top five in the league in terms of grading out in terms of his like clean pocket? And then it's completely like one out of, what is it? Three out of like 30 or 40 passes. And were they getting pressured or hurried or anything like that?
Yeah, I've never seen pressure, you know, splits that are as wild as Zach Wilson's are right now. There may have been some down the years, you know, in PFF where we haven't paid that close attention to it, but certainly nothing that I can think of in recent years where it's been this crazy. His PFF grade goes from basically 90 from a clean pocket down to 23 when he's pressured. That's insane. The numbers, the actual stats are even worse though. Like it goes from 9.1 yards per attempt from a clean pocket, which is a massively high number, to 1.7 yards when he's under pressure. That's insane. Yeah, he's completed something like 5 out of 30 something pass attempts under pressure. When you look at quick pressure, it's even more insane. It's like 1 pass out of 17. And look, it's obviously not all his fault because the offensive line we talked about before, it's bad right now. Like they're down to bare bones. They're backups across the board. Their guys are not supposed to be starting for them. They're giving up a lot of pressure. But like a lot of these situations, I think it's a kind of perfect storm. It's making everything worse. Like Wilson has been bad under pressure throughout the entirety of his NFL career, and it looks as bad now as it's ever been. And it's being made look worse by the fact that the offensive line is also bad, right? So it's really this just nightmare right now of, if there's pressure at all, it's miserable. And a lot of people are sort of saying, well, the Patriots will just blitz, you know, why would you anything other than just blitz the crap out of him right now? It's because if you look at his blitz, they're actually not wild. They're basically the same. Like his numbers are pretty much identical when he's blitzed versus when he's not. It's really just if you put him under pressure and change, you know, the course of the play, if you make him adjust in the play, to, oh, it's pressure, I got to ad lib, everything goes to hell, like immediately. And you can kind of see that just from picking any random play where he's under pressure. He doesn't seem to have a plan. It's like, you know, spin, bail, try and extend the play. There's no kind of obvious pattern to what he's doing. It's just immediate, like, backyard sandlot football, and doesn't tend to go in a good way.
Yeah, it's interesting. I looked at it as like what Zach was coming out of college, what I kind of graded him on, and I looked at a bunch of people I respect too, and see like what they kind of talk with Zach about. And it's over in the NFL, he's been this awesome over the middle thrower. Like, all his numbers, especially like 10 to 20 yard window, like, he's as good as it gets right now in the NFL. And that's a lot of scheme, and that's a lot of scheming guys open, first read, the RPO stuff. I know Tua does a lot of it, and Herbert and all these other guys as well, but Zach's been really good at it. And he's really good at the deep outs on play action, quick five-step drop, boom. Like, when his footwork's really good, he looks like a legit NFL quarterback. And you go, wow, this is why he got taken number two overall. What's weird to me is he doesn't throw outside the numbers anywhere near as well as I thought he was going to coming out of college, which I know that's a lot of coming with the pocket, level of competition, all that. But also it's the – even last year, I felt like when he scrambled, I know the numbers weren't great, but it felt like he had a little bit more of a plan. I don't know if it's – I'm sure it's something to do with some of the reps. You miss time in camp. You don't have the good scramble drill kind of in the season. You're not really breaking that stuff down. But if you want to be that Rodgers, Mahomes, Allen, all those guys, when they break the pocket, it feels like everyone's on the same page. Everyone knows where they're going. Mahomes always knows where Kelce is, always used to know where Tyreek was, and vice versa. And it's not even blaming the Jets receivers right now, because I'm like, there are guys open. It's just, it feels like there's just something missing. And that's got to get cleaned up, because now without Breece Hall, who, running back or not, he's been an explosive pass catcher as well. Obviously, their offense built around kind of the run game right now. Garrett Wilson, Elijah Moore, all these guys who are high draft picks that have high potential need to step up, and they got to get the football. I think I know where you're going to go with this one, and I know where I would go, but who's more of a crushing blow for them, Hall or Elijah Vera Tucker, in your opinion? Because I know everyone, Breece Hall is the bigger name. He's a running back, obviously.
I think Vera Tucker is the bigger problem, not necessarily because he's a more important player or because he makes a bigger impact on the offense, but because it's just the next one of those injuries for a unit that's already taken an ass kicking. Like, the thing I think where injuries really, really bite deep in the NFL is when it starts to focus on an individual position group and just keeps hitting that group. And the deeper you go into the depth chart, the bigger the problem is. So Breece Hall's a great player. He was having a great season, but
you're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
Going one deep into the running back depth chart, I think, is manageable, particularly when you then go and trade for a James Robinson. Like, that's a pretty good fallback option, right? Vera Tucker was already, what, number four, five in terms of offensive tackle options. Now you're down to six. Like, it's just, that's the problem. It's not that Elijah Vera Tucker isn't there anymore. It's that him not being there means you're now down to like the sixth tackle you've had to use this season. And that's just like, no offensive line can withstand that kind of hit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I mean, look, I think the thing with Breece Hall is, at least, like, this is why I think so many people love the Jets offseason, love what they've done the last 2 years, was because they didn't rest on their laurels of, oh, Elijah Moore looked nice or Michael Carter was nice. They were like, no, we're going to go take a running back in the top 35 and a receiver. And we paid two tight ends. We've paid Corey Davis. We've paid Braxton Berrios. Like, we drafted Denzel Mims for whatever it's worth, even though I know it's not been pretty. But there's a lot there, obviously. It's kind of on Zach. And I hate to keep saying this, but like, if they don't win 10, we'll get to this in a second. But for me, if they don't win 10 games, it's probably because the quarterback play keeps getting worse and worse. Because if you look at their schedule, like the way their defense is playing, the way their run game and special teams is playing, if you get even average quarterback play, I feel like you give yourself a chance pretty much in any week, minus at Buffalo, and probably at home against Buffalo is going to be a wash as well. We kind of mentioned it there. Obviously, the Jets trade for James Robinson. I think it's good value. He's 24 years old, not a lot of tread on the tires. It's a 6-round pick, realistically. You know, that guy's at best, he's going to be James Robinson and all that stuff. The Jets don't have to pay him a lot. Do you think they make another move at offensive line or somewhere else? Because obviously we saw the Eagles just, you know, the Eagles are going all in as they should with Robert Quinn and stuff. And Joe Douglas in years past probably sits on his laurels a little bit and says, eh, you know, good start, but, you know, we'll keep building through the draft. If you're the Jets, I know they're not the Chiefs or the Bills, but nobody else really in the AFC right now, you're going, oh, wow, the Jets would be 10, 15 point underdogs in a playoff game against them. So do you think they go after another lineman, or it's more of just let's try to work through the rest of the year and go from there?
I think it's tough because the league has an offensive line problem. Like, there aren't, you know, nobody's sitting there with like a backup tackle that they're really confident in, just sort of waiting to, you know, move them or for the right offer, or, you know, just have them sitting there as a great contingency option. Like, there are teams that don't have a good starting tackle. There's no real quality and depth in offensive lines throughout the NFL. So I think it's tough to find an obvious candidate where you could phone them up and try and make a move trade. Like, there's some players out on the street that may end up being people you should bring in just to take a look at, because they might end up being upgrades over what you have. But that's the problem with offensive line injuries in the NFL right now, is that if you have to go deep into the depth chart, there's no quick fix. There's no way out, because everybody is dealing with a shortage of offensive linemen.
Yeah, look, the Jets have tried to fix this problem. Like, they went out and paid a bunch of guys, and then they had to go pay Dwayne Brown, who then got hurt. They still had George Fant, who's, you know, look, I guess in theory, the Jets' offensive line problems could be fixed in a week or two to an extent with Mitchell and Fant coming back, and you hope they could play average right tackle. I know people, I mean, I mentioned him as well, but Laramie Tunsil, for example, yes, like, in theory, it's great. He's 28 years old. In the offseason, you let Fant walk and Tunsil, but like, he's never played right tackle in the NFL, and Dwayne Brown isn't moving, so it doesn't really, like, that type of stuff is kind of like Madden franchise mode. You change the player's position stuff. That's just, I don't see that happening. And the Jets have already taken 3 or 4 guys off the street. So yeah, it's like, they've kind of exhausted their options there. Want to get to two things. Patriots coming up. Monday was obviously disgusting for New England. Like, that's, you know, I don't think anyone was upset seeing that. That said, Mac Jones today looks like he'll be the starter. I was a little surprised, only because I feel like it's pretty embarrassing as a starting quarterback. You make one turnover off of an injury that now all of a sudden you're benched for a guy, just because, like, it felt like Bill wanted to go to Zappe the whole time. And I know he laid a bunch of bullshit of how he was going to alternate. Two quarterbacks doesn't mean you usually don't have any. What do we see from the Patriots right now? Because, I mean, yes, the defense looked good, but they beat Cleveland and Detroit. And it's like, I don't really know that that's as impressive looking back at it now as maybe we thought at the time.
Yeah, that was a weird game. And I think Bill Belichick's sort of approach to the quarterback situation was strange as well. I don't think anything is good about that. I think Mac Jones should be the starter going forward until he plays his way to the bench. And I don't think he'd done that yet. So that is what it is. Mac Jones hasn't been playing well this season, even independent of the ankle injury. He's been weirdly aggressive with the ball. He's got like a 10-yard plus average depth of target, which is right up there with guys like Jameis Winston, which is not necessarily
not what we saw coming.
Yeah, and particularly for a guy like Mac Jones, his decision making hasn't been good this year. He's been putting the ball in harm's way a lot, and these are things that are generally like the opposite of what you think of for Mac Jones. So if he doesn't pull himself out of that, then he will at some point probably play his way to the bench. But as an offense, that's a great offensive line for run blocking. They've got great running backs in Ramondre Stevenson and Damian Harris. Like, they can get a lot done on the ground. Their defense, I don't think, is that great. I didn't think it would be good at all heading into the year. They've been better than I thought they would be. They're like above average as a pass rushing group. They're kind of average in terms of blitz rate. But the big key to that is, well, now they go up against this Jets offensive line. And it's like, anything that's above average is probably going to cause some problems because of the nature of what you're left with. So that starts to become, you know, Belichick against Zach Wilson generally, and then Belichick plus the ability of New England to actually rush the passer and cause pressure. And what we just talked about with Zach Wilson of how bad he's been under pressure, like, that is where the Jets lose this game if that happens. Like, if they get that amount of pressure and Wilson doesn't figure out how to do a better job under pressure, that's where they're going to cause some problems.
Yeah, we look at, if you look back at week two last year, I think it ended up being 26-6 or 20-6, whatever it was. It doesn't matter. I blocked that game out of my memory. But the reason the Jets lost that game was quite literally because Zach Wilson turned the ball over 3 or 4 times in the first half. Because, like, it was 10-3 at the half still, and the Jets defense was on the field for like 28 of the 30 minutes, it felt like. The Jets are obviously significantly better than they were last year. New England, yeah, I think, is probably at least a tick worse, if not two ticks. Defensively, I'm curious what how New England's going to try to attack the Jets. Common sense would be just run the football, because the Jets have been good against the run, but they're still an undersized unit. They're kind of built around like speed and athleticism and kind of just attacking you. But if the Patriots try to get, like, that's why it's so important for the Jets to take care of the football in this game and try to get a lead early, because if you force Mac Jones to drop back 35 times with the nature in which he's been turning the ball over, as you mentioned, you trust your corners. Like, I trust Sauce Gardner and DJ Reed against Kendrick Bourne and Nelson Aguilar all day, as much as, you know, they're nice players. And I frankly trust, you know, some of the Jets, you know, safeties and stuff and coverage against some of these guys. No one really scares you, I would say, from like a, we have to shut this guy down. Is it crazy for me to say this is kind of a must-win game for the Jets at this point in the year? 5-2, they're at home. They have a stretch with Buffalo or New England, Buffalo at New England. They haven't beat the Patriots in 6 years. 7 years, whatever it is. Like, if now's the time to do it, like, I feel like you kind of have to win on Sunday.
Yeah, like, if you want to have this season be anything other than like a nice surprise or, you know, slightly better than anticipated, like, this is a game you have to win. Like, the Jets, I think, are a better team than the Patriots right now. And if Zach Wilson does anything other than play disastrously under pressure, they probably have the better quarterback as well. So at that point, there's no reason they shouldn't be winning. I think both these defenses probably cause some problems for the opposition offense, but the Jets have better corners. They've got better pass rushers. They've got better skill position players, I think, even without Breece Hall in the lineup. The only place where New England has a real obvious advantage is the offensive line. So, you know, that I think means that if the Jets want to go anywhere this year, this is absolutely a game they should be winning.
Yeah, and David Andrews, we'll see. I know he's obviously a really good player. That hit he took on Monday, I don't know if he ended up – I don't know what the report is. We'll see. Obviously, today the Patriots are always notoriously fun with injuries, but that looked like a concussion from a mile away. Kind of big picture expectations for you for the Jets, and then we'll get into just one or two other things quickly and then wrap up here. But is the expectation – is it fair to say, like, at this point, they should be able to try to, like, they should be a team that's aspiring to be a playoff team. Like, is it fair to pass the, oh, like, let's just be relevant in October because in early November, because it's the 26th of October and they have the second best record in the conference. Like, is it fair, even though it's more a surprise that fans and this team should be going, we can be a playoff team, whether that's a 5 seed or a 7 seed, obviously. Is that fair to say at this point?
I mean, internally, that should absolutely be their expectation. Like, they're in a good position. They've got a lot of things going for this team. Things are looking up, particularly if they beat the Patriots. Like, these are all good things. They should absolutely be looking at the playoffs and thinking, we can make, you know, the postseason. There's no reason that can't happen. From the outside looking in, I think you have to look at that offensive line and say, like, that's a long-term crippling problem. Like, that puts a cap on how good you can be. You add that to the fact that Zach Wilson, A, I don't think has been playing particularly well. B, has been a disaster under pressure. If that continues, you put those two things together and it's like, that's a really difficult thing to overcome over the course of a season. Sure, you can do it for a few games, but, you know, if you're really trying to make the postseason, and that's going to be a struggle. And it, they don't have the same advantage as some of these other teams have of a division that's going to leave it wide open for them to go on that kind of run. Like Buffalo, arguably the best team in the NFL, certainly one of the top three. Miami with Tua is a very difficult proposition as well. And they are likely to go, you know, to have a good record and be a potential playoff team from the same division. So you look at that and you're like, the Jets just don't have as many wins available to them as some of these other teams. Like you look at the AFC South, right? And the entire division is kind of a mess and any one of those teams could, right? Like if the Jets were in the AFC South, you'd be like, yeah, this team should be looking to win that division by the end of the season. There's no reason they can't. But in the AFC East, it's like, man, that's just a tougher task. And it's definitely, it definitely should be their aim. But if you're realistic about it, instead of saying, what are the chances? You probably still say it's a year too early.
Yeah, no, look, I think if they win this weekend, this is all hypotheticals, obviously. If they win this weekend and they play Buffalo competitively the week after in MetLife, my expectation is going to be if you can hang with Buffalo for three or four quarters, which very much remains to be seen, by the way. But that, and if you get some offensive line health back, the guys that are on IR that are slotted to come back soon, now we're talking like, okay, you've now won a bunch of the games you were supposed to, and you're competing with Buffalo, like we should, I'd feel good. If they lose this weekend and then get boat raced by Buffalo by 40, you're going, all right, like try to get to 9 wins, try to sneak into the playoffs. If not, then you can start to seriously take it from there. Last two quick things. One, AFC West-wise, are you slightly surprised that it's just kind of a division of like kind of the Chiefs and a lot of dog shit? Or are we like, is that just because it feels like the AFC West and the NFC West were like, oh, they're the big bad divisions. Yeah. They have all the primetime games. And meanwhile, you look at the NFC East and the AFC East and like, they're pretty clearly the best divisions this year.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Denver thing has been a disaster so far.
Glorious.
Yeah, like I think that's a big shock to most people that Russell Wilson plus that Broncos offense just hasn't worked in any way, shape, or form. That obviously changes the whole dynamic of the division immediately. The Raiders has been a similar story. That thing hasn't worked, hasn't functioned properly on offense until the last couple of weeks. And then the Chargers, at least I think you can explain by they've had a lot of injuries in some really important positions. Including Herbert, by the way, who has played, but has been playing with that rib injury that he's been dealing with for the whole time and hasn't been as good as we expected him to be. So that one, at least, I think you can explain away and makes a lot of sense. But definitely the Raiders and the Broncos not being anything like the teams we thought they were going to be heading into the year, I think is the reason that division just doesn't look as good.
Yeah, it's like the Chargers, when you lose your best tackle, your best edge rusher, who are like two of the best at their position in the league, regardless of anything else, you're kind of screwed. To then lose, to sign J.C. Jackson and then him be not only terrible, but now after the year, Mike Williams obviously basically died on Sunday. Herbert's been hurt. It's some weird coaching decisions that one that, you know, I know you guys debated a lot on the show. Last thing here, kind of like a bigger picture question in terms of just analytics and stuff. We don't have to go on a 30-minute tangent about it, but like just quickly, obviously across all sports right now, we're seeing it. Anyone that watches baseball knows there's this huge debate within the Yankees of how much analytics drives what they do versus how much control. And look at a team like the Jets, where they're, or any of these teams in the NFL, a lot of teams are heavily analytic driven, as they should be. You should have all the information. Do you get, what's your level of frustration when you hear the, oh, the analytics told them to do this, or the coach said he doesn't like analytics? Like, does that not grind your gears at some point because it's kind of defeating the purpose of the point of analytics, or am I off base on that one?
Yeah, I think Nick Wright had a really good kind of diatribe about analytics the other day. He was
first time ever.
It needs like a rebrand, right? Like it's become this sort of cliche or simplified trope of, well, the analytics said this, the analytics said that. And most of the time it doesn't. Like people just, it's labeling things that isn't actually applicable to any of this kind of stuff, right? Ultimately, all analytics is providing you more information, you know, with using trends, using historical data to predict, to best predict your chances of making the right call, right? Like back in the 1960s, when you would go back and look at the tape of your upcoming opponent, the last four games and cut ups, and that's analytics. It's just analytics using a reel to reel, you know, tape. Like it's the same thing. It's exactly the same thing. All you're doing is cutting out that like dinosaur process of literally splicing film together to come up with trends and just pulling it out of a database, because that's what we have the capacity to do these days, right? And then now you can add it to sort of mathematical models and you can actually come up with some hard scientific numbers about what these, what the data, what all the available historical information says are the chances of like this versus this, right? It's just information. Like that's all we're dealing with here. It's never going to say like, you must 100% do this. All we're ever talking about is like, this has a 52% edge versus a 48% edge, and make of that what you will, right? Make your adjustments or whatever. But everybody should at least be able to understand what the conversation is. So when you hear, you know, an announcer say, wow, the analytics told them to do this, like, it's just, they don't have any idea what they're talking about. And that's the disappointing part of it, is like, they haven't been bothered to find out like what this conversation even is. You know, team down two scores, they go for two, the first touchdown. It's not intuitive. It's not the way it's been done for years, but it's quite obvious and easy to understand once you've heard once what the logic is, right? Once you've had it explained to you one time, it makes perfect sense, and you can then convey it to other people. When those guys like act like this is the most crazy decision in the world, or just like say, well, the analytics says to go for two, it shows you that they haven't taken 5 minutes out of their time to figure out what that conversation even is. And that's laziness. Like, that's just negligence in your job. And then I also think like there's a good argument to say that if they're not going to bother to do it, bring somebody on who will, right? You have a guy sitting there for the entire game to give you 20 seconds of crap when there's a weird officiating decision. So you don't have to, right? You don't have to learn the rules because this guy can come in for 20 seconds and tell you what the story is. If that's the approach, do it for analytics as well. Stick a guy in the booth. You can sit there silently for, you know, almost the entire time. But when this happens, this guy can explain the thing that you won't bother to explain. That's what's frustrating.
Yeah. And it's, look, not all of these decisions, as you mentioned, look, there's a lot of times there's coaches that make the wrong decision and they lean on, oh, analytics told me to do this. And they're lying to you also. Like, there's times where Brandon Staley, it'll be 49% don't go and 51% go. And he literally, or whatever, you know, my point, not go. And he still goes for it. Like, that's on him. He's the one making that decision. I think if you look at people's frustration, again, I'm just using the Yankees because it's a whole debate right now. Like, the Yankees have made it clear, like, wait, you're not making any decisions where the numbers, whatever the numbers say, like, you have to do. And that's also not smart because it shouldn't be the other way. I don't think that Robert Saleh, would just use the Jets, for example, like, has mentioned it multiple times this year. They have a kind of game coach that has all the analytics and says, this third down or this fourth down in this situation, whatever, here's your choice. Here are the numbers. You make the choice. And that's the way it's supposed to be. And it's pretty easily explainable. And he's like, he said there was a game, the Ravens game week one. He said, I've read the room. The offense was struggling. Even though it said to go for it, I punted because I didn't trust my offense. Fair. Later in the year, he's now done the opposite where he does trust the offense or trust the defense. So I just kind of want to talk about that because it's a huge thing right now. And you saw it on Monday Night Football again last night or two nights ago where it's just a lot of garbage being said of, oh, I can't stand the analytics. Like, Steve Young, you used analytics, buddy. Okay. Whether you like it or not, I don't think the greatest offensive head coach of all time didn't understand the numbers behind what he was doing. Obviously, make sure you guys are checking out, you know, Sam and Steve on their show, PFF NFL podcast. Kind of a must listen, I feel like. And, you know, Monday morning, it's, you know, bright and early. Nice thing to drive to work to get breakdown every single game. So you'll never feel like your team's slighted. They'll get talked about. Don't worry. And then, yeah, PFF daily stuff, the PFF app. Anything else? Anything else I'm forgetting here?
No, that's it. That's a lot.
All right, awesome. No, I appreciate it. We got the World Cup coming up in a month, so I am fired up. Get a nice little Jets game right into the U.S. Probably, you know, sucking. But other than that, we're rolling, and appreciate you hopping on.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.